Now, some of you sent in some questions that were, they're pretty tough for me to sit here and just turn to the distinguished engineer of Microsoft and ask him. They were really good questions, but they're also very important questions. So what do you say? Here we go. Ha. I got one for you. The infamous age-old security-related question. PowerShell remoting is one of the most important technologies in PowerShell.
Yep.
So that we can manage and scale our systems.
Absolutely.
Cleanly and effectively.
Yep.
We got a question that says, hey, this PowerShell remoting thing uses the HTTP protocol. Mm-hmm. How am I supposed to convince my security guys that this is going to be secure?
Okay, yeah. Here's the answer. Get your security guys. Call them. Like, I'll wait.
Call them. Right now. Bring them in.
Okay. So, here's the deal. I'm a distinguished engineer and lead architect for Windows Server. Use WinRM. It's safe. Now, here's the deal. At the beginning, we were convinced it was safe, but we didn't have any time underneath our belt. So what we did was we made it an optional component. You had to turn it on, and then we've been using that. Now, at some point, we realized, hey, we are going to be doing everything through headless management. Headless management. So, and we're going to do it all through PowerShell remoting and WinRM. So we've invested heavily in security analysis. We've got many, many, many hours on this thing. We became confident enough that now on Windows Server, by the way, this is a big change. Ever since, we were always secure by default, secure by default, secure by default. Each release, we would lock things down more and more and more. In the one change in the last, I don't know how many years.
Long time,
we opened things up. And in, I believe, Windows Server 2012, might have been 2012 R2, now PowerShell remoting is on by default for Windows Server. Windows Server, WinRM is secure. Use it. Now, as always, as security guys know, if you're not going to use a component, don't turn it on. But what that really means is you're not going to use the server, because that's the way you manage servers. You manage servers through PowerShell remoting. So it's safe. Turn it on. You can tell them Jeffrey Snover told you. Go do it.
Well, there you have it. We're done. Say, have a great night. No, just as an add-on to that, I think if you need to know more about this, there's a great ebook once again at PowerShell.org on the secrets of PowerShell remoting that will help both you and your security person understand how this is actually working, how HTTP is getting encrypted through Kerberos, and you can still, if you're hitting machines on the outside, you can put up certificates. It's just as secured as your online banking. It is secured. You have to use it, but you don't have a choice anymore, I think is really what the statement is, because we're managing the servers over remoting. If you don't have remoting, you can't manage your servers. Period. So I love that. And it came from him. So just pointing that out. Another question about remoting, not quite as controversial. The security question is a good question, but has always been the, oh, how can it be secure? It is secure. But another question, and I think this kind of relates, is somebody's asking about the double hop or the multi-hop.
Yeah.
And the whole, you know, I have to turn on cred SSP. Is there a right way to do this? Is there a wrong way to do this? What's the deal on the multi-hop and the cred SSP?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you should say this, because I was talking to Butler Lampson. You know Butler?
No.
Oh, hello, McFly.
Oh, no, no.
Butler Lampson's a rock star in the industry. He's a Turing Award winner. Have you ever heard of this guy Turing and the Turing Award? Anyway, so Butler's...
As in Alan Turing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So he's a Turing Award winner. Big
oh,
deal.
Boy.
And he works here at Microsoft, in Microsoft Research, and longtime security guy. And he was just the other day, we were at a security thing, and he was saying that it was in the 50s that an Air Force general said, if you want security, you have to put up with some inconvenience. And he wasn't talking about computers, just in general. And that's the case. And so what does that mean? That means if you want to be secure, you put up with some level of insecurity. So what happens is when I remote to that machine, and then you want to access something on another box, that's called the second hop. And what happens is that it doesn't work very well. It's inconvenient. And the reason for that is, if I remote to that machine in a way that when I'm on that machine, I can go access something else as you, what that means is that machine has the ability to grab your token and not just go off as you, but use it other places. So imagine I remote and there's a bad, that machine's been compromised, they can get your token in a way that they can replay it. Like call up your bank and say, give me all your money, or, you know, access anything anywhere. And so what happens is we go to that machine in a way that they can't do that. That if they ever go off box, it doesn't go as you, it goes as some anonymous user. And so that's one of the challenges that you have with PowerShell remoting. Now you might say, well, I trust that box. That's not the issue. The issue is this, is you're gonna be doing remoting, and you're gonna be remoting to everything. So it's not a matter of trusting that box, you have to trust every box. Because if any of those boxes is compromised and you connect to it in a way that allows them to take your token and move it elsewhere, they got you, baby. They got you. So that's why it's inconvenient. Now, if you want to do that, there's a way to do it. It's called Cred SSP. Cred SSP, you go to that box and you say, this person, I want, when they come in, I want you to be able to accept one of their tokens that allows you to go off box as them. And then on this box, you have to say, right, so remember, if you want to launch a nuke, you have to use two keys. Guess what? We require three keys, you know, because it's we want to be clear. You want to really know what you're doing here, and I'll be clear about that. So you got to enable it on that machine, you got to enable it on this machine, and then you've got to say, I'm using it. Okay, so three locks. Now, when would you want to do that? And the real answer is that's really designed for jump box scenarios.
Right.
Now, a jump box scenario is when you say, okay, I'm here, I want to manage that machine, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to set up a jump box. And this is so that you've got different networking control points. You say, the only things that can manage those machines is this box here. And the point of that then is that you're going to really lock that box down. This is like a domain controller. You know, you really want to make sure it's super, super secure. And then people go to the jump box in a way that then they can go manage other machines. So it's a way, it's actually used to increase security, not decrease security. So if you're using Cred SSP to increase security, goodness. If you're using Cred SSP to decrease security, probably not a good idea.
Not a good idea. And I'm taking a note right now to make sure I know all the Alan Turing Award winners that work at Microsoft, so I don't look like a moron more than I do. So we had a great question come in, and this is a great time for you to talk about what Connect is. The question was this. Why don't you use uservoice.com to get feedback on PowerShell rather than Connect?
I have no idea. We got a guy who's looking at that very question.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Because Connect is, tell us what Connect is, because Connect is a great way for to get feedback.
Yeah, so that's the way we accept feedback. There's a connect.microsoft.com, and there's a PowerShell session, PowerShell area, and you can file bugs, and you can file feature requests. So a lot of times people ask me, hey, Jeffrey, could you just please add this? And the answer is, here's what you better way to do it is, go file it on Connect and then tell other people about it. Because what you can do is then have people vote it up. And then we can look at that. Because if it's just you and me, I mean, who knows? Maybe it's a good idea, maybe it's not. If you put it on Connect and you get thousands of people say, yeah, that's exactly what I want, well, then it's pretty clear that's important. If you put it on Connect and ask thousands of people to vote it up and they'll say, yeah, no. Well, that's a data signal too. Even if you convince me, if thousands of people say no, then it's probably not the right thing to do.
Awesome.
Let's connect.
Now, for the big one. And this is also something that, you know, you've made, so you've got to come clean with it. Desired state configuration. First of all, big question is what is desired state configuration?
Desired state configuration is a distributed, heterogeneous, configuration management platform.
I love all those words. What do those words mean?
Okay, so basically, we looked at the challenge of, so let me give you some context. So context is Windows, I mentioned to you, fantastic success in the enterprise, and we've got some challenges going to the cloud. Now, as I sat down and I thought through, well, what challenges are we gonna have doing the cloud? What I realized that is that the cloud gets managed differently than the enterprise. And so that's when I started the Desired State Configuration Project. I said, we need this. Let me be clear. I didn't write it. We got that great team of people. So I don't want to take too much credit here. But I did say, we got to go here. This is critical. And here are the characteristics. Here's what success is going to look like. Okay, and so the point is that you want to be able to manage things through a desired state configuration, a way that says, here's a document that explains where I want it to be. I hand it to that. It makes it so. It monitors the system. If it goes out of sync with the specification, it either warns you about it or warns you about it and auto-corrects it. And then what we decided to do was to do the platform play. Now, the platform play, so the way I like to describe it is the days before, did I mention the box and the printers? No.
Okay. No.
So and if you're old enough, what you'll remember that you used to walk into a store to buy software. You'd buy that, you'd look, and you say, oh, that box looks good. That looks pretty good. I think I'm going to buy that. And you do that. But before you paid, you turn the box around. And you look to see what printers it worked with. And then he's like, oh, dang, I wish I could buy this product, but it doesn't work with the printer I have. And you put it back on the shelf, and then you buy WordPerfect. It wasn't a particularly good word processor, but they invested in all the printers, and that's why everybody bought it, because they turned it around and worked with them all. Okay. Now, this is bad for everyone. It's bad for the printer manufacturers, because you come up with a great new printer, and then nothing could print to it, right? And so then it was bad for the software vendors, because you write some software, and then you got to go write to all these printers. And it was bad for the community, because they couldn't pick the best printers and the best software. So Microsoft then did what? Right? So question, how are we going to succeed in the cloud? We're going to do it the way we succeeded everywhere. Microsoft's a pretty simple beast. We do platforms and partners. We do platforms. So we built a platform technology. We called it the Windows printer driver model. And then partners plugged in their print drivers to it. And then software manufacturers wrote software to it. And then all of a sudden, our customers could pick any printer they want and any software they want. And it worked. And it was a miracle. And it was a miracle. And everybody got rich. everybody right. did well. And people got the best choice, and everything worked well. We need to do the same thing for the cloud. One of the key things we're doing for the cloud is a distributed, heterogeneous configuration management platform. So the idea is everybody in our ecosystem writes to the providers, DSC resources, to this platform, and that enables any of the configuration management tools to write to that platform and be assured that they manage everything. So here's what it means. That means as a customer and looking at configuration management tools, you want to make sure you pick one that layers on top of it, and then you'll know it manages everything in Windows. And you don't have to say, oh, well, does it manage this or that? If it talks to desired state configuration, they all manage the same things. And that's why if you've got a configuration, something to be configured, you want to plug into it so that you don't have to go. In fact, I talked to a guy, I won't say from who, but a partner at this conference the other day. I was sitting at and they say, oh, what do you do? Oh, you're a vendor. And what do you do? Oh, well, I'm in charge of configuration management for my stuff. I said, oh, well, what are you doing? He says, well, I'm here with these guys, I'm doing some stuff there. I said, well, what about those guys? He says, yeah, I got a code to them. I said, well, what about these guys? He says, yeah, we're talking to them. I think we're going to have to do something to them. It's like, how stupid is that?
Right.
If instead you plug in desired state configuration once, and then you get them all,
right,
it just makes sense. And he's like, can you send me more information on that? I said, yes, I will.
And we actually have a lot of questions about this as a platform. But just as a side note, real quick, If you need to have more details and deep dive on DSC, we just completed and has been posted on the MBA site, both a Getting Started with DSC and an Advanced DSC to take you through all of the technical needs to learn how to deal with configuration management. And DSC is definitely the thing that you want to be doing if you're working in PowerShell right now. But we got a great question in along this, and I'm just going to read the question. We have not seen any third parties pick up that low-hanging fruit and start it on the development. What if we want to disregard Puppet and Chef? You know, what
well, Puppet is, sorry, Chef has shown their DSC support. So I was, in fact, at the conference I was at ChefConf. And they had me there. They did one of the keynotes and did a talk on PowerShell. And then I stuck around and they were showing all their great support for desired state configuration. So they're there. There are other third parties out there. I don't know why they said that. There's a Guardrail. Guardrail from ScriptRock is our very
ScriptRock,
nice product.
Yeah, definitely.
And then there's Aditi as well. So yeah, no, I anticipate.
There are third parties that are picking up and building off of this platform.
There
and
are.
Also, one of the great things about this is you can build your own tooling on this platform as well. So that's one of
But you know, it's worth being, you know, just completely honest here. We developed this technology, what, in Windows Server 2012, R2, and we had 12 resources. So honestly, if you're a startup company and you looked at this and you see 12 resources, you know, I'm not sure it made sense to go say, I'm going to go bet the business on this thing. You probably look at that and say, huh, that's interesting. I'm going to pay attention to that. And then you waited a couple months and you saw a bunch more and then a bunch more and then a bunch more. And in a little over a year, we've gone from 12 to over 180. So the answer is, yeah, we're picking up steam and it's looking pretty great. So, you know,
and I wanted
it makes
to add
a whole lot more sense now than it did a year ago.
And I think you bring up another great point that I wanted to ask you about, this whole picking up steam. So from my perspective with DSC, there were a huge commitment from Microsoft in developing resources. Mm. But there's a lot of steam being picked up and a lot of speed being done by engineers in a lot of different areas, the SMA space, Azure space, all of these spaces that involve PowerShell, but involve their technologies. They're moving so fast. And solving problems for the customer. How do you address when something, I mean, with everybody at this high pace, there are gonna be things that don't work, that break, that go wrong. At this high speed, how do you work with that? How do you deal with this process?
Yeah, so we're trying to get on an agile footing. In fact, we're on an agile footing. And so let's talk about what that really means. Agile footing, back to the point of Satya. Pay attention to your customers, make sure that you're doing things to make them successful and they use your product. So in the past, we used to think, code, test, and then give it to you and say, oh, that didn't meet your needs? Let us know. We're 3 years from now, we'll have a chance to fix that. And of course, that is completely broken. And so now we're in a model where we're taking PowerShell and DSC and we're releasing it. We're trying to get on a monthly cadence. Right now, it's probably every couple months, but we're giving it in increments, small increments. And what do you think about this? What do you think about that? What do you think about this? And then we get feedback and we're always clear about, hey, these things we think we're stable, you can bet on,
right.
And these things are experimental. So give us the feedback. And if it if needed, we'll introduce breaking changes on those components. And so we're always clear about that and clear about when it goes from experimental to stable. Anyway, so we're listening to our customers and always asking, well, what's the next most important thing? So that's the answer. We move quick, but we move in smaller increments. We're constantly listening, trying to find out what's next. Now, here's the interesting part about that is now, how do you have a moment? Right, you used to have these big launch parties.
Just between you and I, or I don't know what you're. Oh.
No. No, how do you have, we used to have these big launch parties, big coming out. Ta-da! And the answer is, wait, you know, I saw that like a year ago. Oh, you're finally getting around to shipping that? You know,
I've seen that.
So it'll be a challenge, honestly, for the marketing guys to figure out how to make a big splash out of these things. And so that's going to be a challenge.
So with the rapid pace of DSC, there are a lot of us trying to get caught up in a couple of different areas. One of the new features to V5 when it comes out, that's already out in the February preview,
yeah.
That people can work with now is writing resources that are class-based resources. And we got a couple of questions in. Why don't you, we have a sing now. Why don't you talk for a moment about what class-based resources are, and then I have a couple questions.
Okay, so basically we're trying to address two issues. Issue number one, is that classes dramatically simplify the creation of DSC resources. Now, DSC resources, what did I say? DSC is a distributed heterogeneous. What's that heterogeneous? That means down-level versions of Windows, and it means Linux. Linux. So then how are you going to do that? And I mixed an adjective. It's standards-based. So again, we want to be able to get everybody so that they can adopt this. So we implement the standards, and the standards are the DMTF standards. Okay. Now, in order to do that, what we did was we have schema documents, and that's called a MOF. So you describe your schema in a MOF, and then you had a provider, which then had to implement that MOF with a well-defined set of signatures. And so first, getting that set up, a little bit awkward. Next is, if you got it wrong, well, that's even more awkward. You got to change the schema file, then you got to change three signatures, and then, oh, wait, did I get that right? Did I get that wrong? So, you know, it works. We got 180 things. We're actually going pretty darn well. But it looked at it and said, there's a great opportunity to fix this or make it simpler. And so now you can write a class and say, hey, this is my DSC resource, and we will auto-generate the schema for you. And so it dramatically simplifies that. The next is, well, now we're doing this as a class. Let's go address some of the language issues that developers really didn't like about PowerShell. Now, I mentioned to you that we always wanted to be this combination language that it met the needs of the operators and the developers with a single tool. Absolutely, works extremely well. However, there were certain elements of the PowerShell language that developers looked at and said, oh, I don't like that. Those are shell semantics, not programming semantics. I wish I had programming semantics. Well, classes, we said, this is a great opportunity to give them what they were looking for. And so basically, we've implemented more programming semantics in the classes, so they like, programmers like it more.
Now, this brings up another great point that is very helpful to all MCPs that are working with PowerShell and moving forward. You can write DSC resources without using classes.
Correct.
But would you say classes is the best way to go for writing the DSC resources?
It's the easiest way. Yeah.
Now, okay, so this is great.
I'm planning to write all mine in class.
Okay, great. So I'm planning to write mine in classes too. And here's the thing. If you're going to write in classes, there's a lot more rules to the road now
yep.
that have to be followed. An IT pro or an IT operator really has to learn more development skills. But that should be the point, right?
I don't think they have to learn that many more. So first, I don't think so. Basically, let's be clear. The difference in programming languages, kind of modes, were certain shell semantics, which the Unix guys use a lot. I'm not sure how much the Windows guys are doing. So one of them is called lexical or dynamic scoping. So lexical and dynamic scoping. In classes, we have lexical scoping, and in shell scripts, you have dynamic scoping. So what that means, you've got subroutines, routines, which call subroutines, which call subroutines, which call subroutines. Down here, if I say, $x equals $foo, well, where do you get $foo? And we look for it in this scope, and if it's not there, dynamic scoping says, go up above.
Right.
Is it there? No, go up above. Is it there? Is it above? Et cetera, et cetera. And then finally, if you don't find it, you throw an exception. But you've gone all the way up, right? So that's dynamic scoping. Lexical scoping says, hey, if it ain't here, it ain't here. That's the deal.
We're done.
You're done. And so that's what we're providing. And the second thing was that in an environment where you're going to return something, you have to declare that you're going to return it and give a type, what type you're going to do. And then you have to have an explicit return statement. And if you accidentally, so what happened was you do that in a function, you can do that in a function, works great. But if you accidentally do something which emits an object through the pipeline, it shows up as well. And that just drove people crazy. It drives me crazy. I hate it. And I'll just be honest here, it was a misstep. Now, the way the shells work, it makes perfect sense. Anything that gets emitted goes to the output of a shell. That's the way shells have always worked. And then, as I said, we wanted to be more and more friendly to developers. So we said, well, developers like a return statement. So we're going to allow them to do a return statement, which is fine, except it didn't disable emitting things to the pipeline.
Yeah.
So honestly, that was a mistake. We shouldn't have done that. Fixing it at this point means breaking changes, means right. PowerShell version 2, PS2. And maybe we could do that. We've talked about that. And we said, you know, that PS2, that's sort of the thermonuclear option.
Right.
Here, it's not that terrible. Just don't do that. And then we were pleased to have the opportunity to address that with classes.
With classes, yeah.
Because
that fixes that for it, so you don't have to use the nuclear option. It does, though.
One other thing?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So let me just clear. I'm sort of admitting a mistake there. It's shocking how few of those there actually are.
Well,
we've been doing this a while. And
I wasn't going to point this out, but, you know, I think I've counted maybe one or two.
Yeah.
And that's about it. I mean, when you really think about it, it is amazing in a product that's this vast and this capable that, first of all, you defined it with the Monad Manifesto, but at this point, it's kind of remarkable that there are as few missteps as that there are because of the vast size of this.
Yeah, and I'll just
say, there's a lot of thinking and a lot of forethought on how this should have worked from the very beginning.
There's definitely some of that, but also we just have a fantastic team. You know, a lot of people, Jeffrey Snover, inventor of PowerShell. Yeah, I love it, thank you. But boy, the credit goes to the team. I've just got an awesome team. You want to give me some credit? Give me credit for getting a great group of people and then giving them the environment where they can do their best work. I mean, that's the real story. We just have a fantastic team.
And
that's why a lot of people come up and say, oh, thank you. I loved it yesterday when this guy said, please tell your team thank you.
Yeah,
you're a smart guy. You figured it out.
And, you know, I don't know if a lot of people realize this, but a lot of the team members that were there at the very beginning are still there today.
Yeah.
And still working there today. And it's a joy to go to Ignite or to go to the PowerShell Summit and be able to talk to them, because not only do you get a lot of history, but you see how passionate they are into making this product work right for us. And they're very interested in your opinions and your feedback and your questions when you get to meet them, which is really great.
I think that's awesome. You know, remember Jim Truer?
Yeah, Jim Truer.
Jim Truer and Bruce Payad wrote the original language. I said, hey guys, here's what I want and here's what I need and go. And they owned the language. And so they wrote this language and it was minimal, 10 times beyond my wildest dreams of what I could have wanted. They just did a wonderful job. Anyway, so at some point, Jim had a brain fart and decided to go do something else. And it was so sad to see him leave, but we got him back.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
That's great.
It's wonderful to have him back. And so he's doing some fantastic stuff. In fact, he's doing a bunch of the Pester work.
Oh, that's awesome. It's so glad to have Jim back. That just makes, it's like having the family home. Well, it's better.
The prodigal son
has returned.
Have like a feast.
A feast or something. That's great. A technical question on DSC, and then I have some other things to kind of as we start to wrap up on this. When you're configuring the LCM and
local configuration manager,
and you wanted to get stuff from a pull server, let's say an HTTPS pull server. You have to put in a GUID for the configuration
GUID, yes.
ID.
Yep.
The question is this.
Yep.
Does it really have to be a GUID, or can I just slap anything in?
You know, here's the answer. I don't know, but don't mess around. It's meant to be a GUID.
Yeah.
It might be that the implementation allows you to do something else. Don't, because we're going to rely on it being a GUID at some point.
A lot of tooling that's being made by a lot of people is built on the fact that it's a GUID. So you want to follow the rules of the road on this one.
Yeah,
right?
It's a GUID.
It's a GUID.
By the way, and so the whole point of that was that the GUID is going to act as a key into some data store. So again, mentioned it's a platform. So imagine you had a platform that then said, a solution who, before it calls the DSC platform, first goes and does an inventory, and then associated with that inventory as a GUID for the key. Then when the DSC comes and says, here's my GUID, the solution can then use that GUID to say, oh, here's all the things that it has. Here's what its configuration should be. And if you think about it, having the DSC, who's going to ask this question a lot, here's who I am, what should I have, here's who I am, what should I have, him sending up a GUID saying, here's what I have, is very, very efficient. Alternatively, if you said, oh, here's all the things I have, here's my inventory each time, that would be very inefficient. So that's the motivation for why we use the GUID.
Now, we had a couple of questions, and we actually answered this earlier, but I just want to point out, we had a couple of questions that all related together on DSC, basically on making conditional, how do I decide when I want to run a particular configuration against a VM, and some questions about, as a matter of fact, one of them was, you know, how do I decide if I want to delay a start of a configuration against a particular machine or a VM? And we answered this by talking about SMA and the orchestration capabilities. Yeah. And really, one of the things you want to look at, you can get this from the Power Scripting podcast. Those guys have done a great job. Michael Green is somebody you want to look at, who just talked about this a couple of months ago.
That's superstar Michael Green.
Super. You. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Michael, we all owe Michael a huge debt of gratitude. Michael has been doing fantastic work with desired state configuration. Rob Willis, fantastic work, wrote a ton of those providers, really is using desired state configuration to configure some very large systems and give us feedback like, hey, this doesn't work. Oh, thank you so much. What do you mean? And then Charles Joy. Charles kind of pioneered the use of when to use SMA and when to use desired state configuration.
That's
rock star group of people.
And check that out, and check out the Power Scripting podcast that has Michael Green talking about that very issue and how to get started with integrating SMA into your life. If you're working with PowerShell, it's got to become part of it, especially with configuration management. They start to go together like this kind of thing. Now, sir, I have some couple of exiting questions on the way out. But before I do, I just want to point something out. We really appreciate all the questions that you sent in, very much so. And we hope we've gotten through most of them, but some of them we may have missed and not had a chance to get to. If not, or if you want to follow up further, do us a favor. There's this vibrant community in PowerShell that is trying to help you, because we know how hard it is sometimes to get started. But once you get over that hurdle, PowerShell becomes the most powerful, yes, I said that twice, management tool for all of your management needs. I know I sound like I'm doing some kind of sidewalk thing, but here's the thing. You need a place to go to ask questions. And the place to go to ask questions, PowerShell.org, go to the forums, ask your question, ask your follow-up. MVPs and super intelligent people are out there right now.
And they, Jason. I'll
hang, you know, just to hang and kind of float by to answer your questions for you.
Both.
That's right. That's right. You really have to watch the MBAs we did, especially the DSC ones. Both neurons are firing. So out of all of your career, from the perspective of the release of PowerShell version 1 when Exchange released back in November of 2006, and all the way, see, I do have one neuron that fires, and all the way up to now, what's one of your favorite PowerShell moments?
I was just telling, you mentioned Exchange. I ran into Perry Clark at the airport yesterday.
Oh, okay.
And I was telling him the great story about the drunk admin on Bourbon Street, New Orleans. So we had a great tech ad. Everyone's having a blast and many drunk people. And the guy comes up to me, thank you. And he tells me the story. He says, my boss told me, you got to learn PowerShell. And he says, hell no, I'm a GUI guy. I don't want to learn no dang PowerShell. And the boss says, I'm telling you, it's your job, learn PowerShell. And he said, okay, fine. He says, a week later, I was having a blast. You guys have produced a really fun tool. And so I was just having a blast with this thing. He says, then it came time for my review. And I got in there and I knew what it was gonna be. I had topped out in my career. It had been 2, 3, 4 years since I had gotten a raise. And this was at, by the way, the height of the recession. Right, nobody was getting raises. And so he knew he wasn't getting anything. And so he gets a piece of paper and says, oh, thank you. The guy says, wait, sit down. He says, read it. He says, I thought, oh my God, am I getting fired here? And he read it, and he got a 17% raise. 17%. When most people were getting zero, he got 17%. And his boss said, man, since you've learned PowerShell, you have just transformed as an employee. You're my most productive employee, and I just wanted to say thank you. And he says, you just changed my career. And so that was a particularly poignant moment when it became clear the human impact, back to that thing I mentioned, make people a rock star. And by the way, here's the thing people don't understand. When that guy got 17%, as managers, you get a bucket that you can use. And if you give 17% to somebody, that means there's a whole lot less for other people. So the people who weren't using PowerShell, the people who are still using the GUI, their bonuses went to this guy. Okay, so it made him successful. And then just been story after story of things like that. I got to tell you, that's why I do what I do. I love to make people successful. I love it when I hear that someone's been a hero to their organization. Another humorous one, I just love this one. Guy says, you know, oh, the boss comes in. And he says, oh, hey, everyone, stop what you're doing. Drop all the work. We got to get this information from every single one of our servers before we leave this week. And I know it's going to take a lot of work. He says, call home, tell your family, you know, you got to put the extra hours in, got to do whatever it takes. We got to do this. And it's like, oh, and so they all go running off. And he says, I sat down on my desk and I realized, hey, wait a second, I think I can do this in PowerShell. He says, eh? And he says, in a couple minutes, I had the answer. He says, and then he says, well, I decided I'd pretty it up, so I put it into Excel. So basically, 10 minutes, I had this gorgeous looking report. I said, well, then what'd you do? He says, I took the rest of the day off.
There you go. That's the best.
He took the rest of the day off, came in the next morning, showed his boss, and he was a hero.
There you. That's the whole point to automation. That's what we want to do that for. Now, here's a question that I have that's really for, the answer is for you guys directly. So here's the question. What can the MCP community, the MCP Insider community, what can we be doing to help with the evolution of PowerShell, automation, configuration management? What is it that we should be doing for you?
Yeah, so there's two answers. First is grab the bits, use the bits, communicate with us, talk to us, talk to us, talk to us. There was a guy on Twitter who said, oh, I think your stuff's a blah, blah, blah. I said, oh, really? Please send me some details. And he sent me this great details. Like, here's what I tried and here's what it didn't work. And I was like, oh, this is gold. So I had the team come here and look. And he gave very clear things about what he was trying to do, what he wanted it to do, and what it wasn't doing. And that stuff's gold. So we love hearing from our customers what you find valuable and, more importantly, what you need it to do. And the second thing is to contribute to the community. We now have the PowerShell repository. Right now that's invite only, but soon that will be opened up to the public where you can create your scripts, your modules, et cetera, and then publish them so that other people can benefit from them. Really, this is a team effort. And we all benefit from the community. We all benefit from the community, and we all owe the community a debt of gratitude. And so we should contribute to the community. So those would be the two answers.
And one of the things that I like to say to everybody is once you've gone through the learning experience of PowerShell, once you're using PowerShell effectively, why not help somebody else learn PowerShell? Go answer a question in forums, help the guy that's sitting next to you, help somebody with PowerShell, because you know it's going to affect their career. Now I have the ultimate question. I just want you to be impressed that I avoided the whole boxer brief conversation, okay?
Yeah.
I just want to point that out, okay? So I'm hoping that scores me.
Yeah, AMAs can go anywhere.
Yeah, that's... Whoa! And believe me, some of the questions we got in could be kind of interesting. You know, you are rather known for a couple of characteristics. And as a matter of fact, if you happen to watch the... last DSC MVA on the advanced one that we did, this really becomes exemplified, but you're known as a gentleman with a particular taste for ties. Mm. Shall I say, bright, colorful, loud ties.
Yes.
So we have a question from a concerned citizen about this. How many ties do you actually have, and do they have their own closet?
They don't have their own closet, and I'd probably say I have maybe 40 ties?
I don't know if you can sense it, but I'm sensing an addiction. You do have some of the most colorful, 41. Wonderful ties. There's 41. Yeah, just a new tie right now.
It's a new tie, yeah.
That's right. And if you happen to be magical and you're watching the Advanced DSC, you might catch the very special module where Jeffrey went through, what, 8 ties in an hour? It was 8 ties, like, in an hour. It was amazing.
No, you got to tell him the story.
Oh, well.
So what happened was we were doing this MVA just like this, and sometimes they cut to Jason. And while they cut to Jason, I'd run over here and I'd put it on a new tie, and then they'd come back and it's like, and you'd ask me a question. I'd like give him the signal, like, okay, go. And then he's like, ask a question, and I have a new tie. And then we cut to Jason, I'd go get another tie.
What's funny is about the third tie in, somebody in the chat group actually caught it right away. I didn't think anybody would get it for like a month or two. But
I changed those. I mean, they were crazy.
It was
like
crazy.
Boring to bright. There's a pink one.
Oh, that was amazing. That was totally amazing. Well, sir, you know, thank you for taking the time to answer these questions from the MCP Insider viewers and so forth, of everybody that's out there.
Always a pleasure.
And, you know, it's going to be very interesting to hear what you have to say coming at those great conferences that everybody should be attending, like Ignite and the PowerShell Summit and those kind of things. We're all looking forward to what you're thinking of as you go forward. So
yeah, I told you, we're working on some of the most exciting stuff I've ever worked on. Your head's going to explode. Again, what I said was, you know, all people think, oh, you know, going to the cloud, I don't know that they're going to do it. Put your seatbelt on. And the other thing, sorry, before we go. Some people I've talked to have said, oh, you know, you're shifting your focus to the cloud. I'm not going to the cloud. I'm an enterprise guy. Guy, don't worry about that. That's fine. Most of the stuff we're going to do for the cloud is going to directly benefit you. I mentioned the story about, hey, remember when PCs used to blue screen all the time? And now that's a pretty rare occasion. Why is that? And the answer is because we did server. And server, you can't have blue screens. So doing the work on the server made the desktop what it is today, a stable, reliable, really trustworthy environment. So too, the stuff we do to the cloud is going to have direct impact and benefits to those people staying on the enterprise. So it's all good, my friend. It's going to be a really good world.
And this really is the key. As you, as an MCP and part of the MCP Insider program, the benefit is stay up on the technologies, stay excited about the technologies. Remember why we got into this in the first place, because it was a lot of fun figuring this stuff out, and get passionate about it again, because some of the new things that you'll be able to do to bring to your business to make the business more agile and to keep your business moving forward, well, it's all right here. And so once again, thank you, Jeffrey Snover, distinguished engineer of Microsoft, very much. And guys, come back for more in the MCP Insider series, the AMA series. Make sure you're asking questions when they publish them, because without questions, we'd have nothing to do.
Yeah, ask all the guys after me, boxes or briefs.
Yeah, ask all the other guys, boxes or briefs. So for Microsoft, for the distinguished engineer myself, thank you very much for joining us. Have a great day.